everybody, and welcome to First Name Basis, where we chat with special guests, industry leaders, and tribal scale employees to get an authentic but informal conversation going on a variety of relevant tech and innovation topics. Today, we have the pleasure of speaking with Carolyn Morissette, VP of Digital and Data at McCain Foods. Welcome, Carolyn.
Thank you.
And we are going to be chatting about a current ongoing project, quite important to McCain as well as Tribal Scale. And Carolyn, if you wouldn't mind, can we start by asking a little bit of detail about the project? I understand that it's both some specific products that are being created here, as well as a general digital transformation approach that's taking place at McCain. Would you be able to differentiate a little bit between the two and talk about each one in terms of what led to determining that this is something that needed to be done and how you initially approached that?
Yeah, sure. Happy to. And thanks for having me, Chris. So McCain is embarking on a digital transformation, like many companies, and especially many manufacturing companies. We see a huge opportunity for digital and data to improve our business. We made an investment in our agriculture function about 3 years ago to pursue a digital transformation, which, as you said, is not just about new technologies, but also about new business processes and how we can bring more data into our decision-making and new tools for both our McCain employees, but also, in this case, our growers, who were the main users for the external tools that we built. And we learned a lot from that transformation, and it's still ongoing, and we continue to learn a lot every day. But we started looking around for sort of what's the next thread we can pull on in terms of digital. And that's where we were looking at manufacturing. Obviously, McCain is the world's largest manufacturer of frozen French fries, frozen potato products. We make a lot of French fries. Manufacturing is the heart of our business. And there's a lot of opportunity, like many new digital technologies in that function. So that's where we started looking. About a year ago, we started looking at opportunities, looking at how we could use digital technologies, use AI, use data to support and drive new business processes in manufacturing. And that's how the project was originally conceived, was sort of looking at the opportunities for data, for digital, because we'd had this experience already with the digital transformation. So we started looking at the use cases. We did a number of visits with different plants around the world. So we had a small team that was partnered with our manufacturing leadership colleagues, understanding pain points in the current process, understanding opportunities where more data would support decision-making, especially real-time data could support decision-making. And we were traveling around to different plants all around the world, in France, in the UK. We did some virtual visits in Australia, in South America. We have some plants, obviously, in the US and Canada. We have a number of plants. And we heard some common problems, common opportunity areas. And that gave us the confidence to say, okay, there probably is something here. That, of course, there's nuance to every facility that we have, but certainly there's some opportunities for scalability with digital technologies and data. And that gave us the confidence to really think about building out a project like this.
Gotcha. Thank you. That's really great overview. In terms of the goals for the project, mm-hmm. and for those of our listeners who may have problem or may have a challenge in their heads sort of combining, hey, on the one hand here we have French fries and frozen potatoes, and on the other hand we have this whole technological capability and all and digital, how did those two combine? What in which goals do you expect to have the needle moving for McCain? Any that you can share that is?
Yeah. We thought about it in two categories. So the first is obviously the financial goals, which are essential to make the business case for this investment. But I can also talk about some non-financial goals. But first, if we're going to just stick with raw ROI for a second. So obviously, we're a manufacturing plant. We would have a goal to reduce downtime on the on the line. So keeping our factories running 24/7, 365, that would be a goal. Obviously you have planned downtime as part of that cycle for maintenance, for sanitation, things like this, but we would want to reduce unplanned downtime on the line and optimize planned downtime. So for times that the plant needs to be down or the line needs to be down, how can that time be used most efficiently to complete the activities we need to complete and get the line back up as soon as we can. Second one would be, while the line is up, can it be run faster? And there's a number of different factors that contribute to what we call line rate. And so we'd be looking to optimize or increase line rate wherever possible and using data and analytics to support that. And then the final one is in what we call recovery. So increasing recovery, or you could think about it the other way, is reducing waste. And waste can mean anything from certainly the waste of the potato, for example. So if you, you know, for example, if you have a producing a French fry without a peel on it, the peel would be waste. We have quite a lot of processes in our factories to utilize that for other, to use the potato waste, for example, for other processes, but there might be other things, right? So if we're storing the potatoes too long, you could have some rot or some defect in the potato. And so our project is looking across the chain end to end, from growers all the way to packaged fries, to figure out how do we reduce the amount of waste throughout that cycle. We can also look at waste and also in terms of energy use and in terms of water use. So how do we optimize our energy and our water relative to the outputs to reduce that sort of waste as well? So waste in the three categories of potato waste, energy, and then water. And then the non-financial metrics, we looked at things like employee engagement, for example. So we have new operators coming into our operations and they might expect more digital tools, right? They're using an iPhone at home or they're using a tablet at home, and then they come into the factory and they might be on or more paper-based processes. And so they're expecting a more engaging experience when they come to work. We're looking at opportunities to support codification of tribal knowledge with our very, very experienced operator base. They know how to make the best delicious French fry. How can we codify some of those practices into an application or into a data set that can be used to support other operators who are newer to our operations?
Gotcha. Appreciate that. And I must tell you, in the time that we've been working together on this project, one of the things that struck me and I find fascinating and is a reminder to me of just how amazing and interesting the space that we work in is just the realization that while there may be many businesses and many places still left that are, let's call them, traditional in nature and harken back to industrial times in terms of the processes that they have in place and even the products that they make, digital is beginning to touch everything, or has begun to touch everything, and incorporating digital is about more than just taking advantage of the efficiencies created by it, but it also plays into the people, it plays into the decisions you make as a business, and all the items you mentioned. It's been a fascinating trip so far. Would you say that and now that I think about it, and we're sort of riffing a little bit in the conversation, would you say that there's probably also a component here in terms of attracting a different or a newer or a less experienced subset of the workforce to industries that they may not have otherwise been looking at, in terms of the modernization that happens with a project like this, the capability to work on new tools and new technologies that makes it as exciting as any other place or any other type of company to be working for?
Absolutely. I think it's an opportunity for the role of the team that's working on the line. And that goes from the operator to our maintenance team, to our shift supervisors, to our plant management team. So at every level, our goal would be to make the day-to-day life safer and more consistent and hopefully more fun as well, in terms of the work that they're being asked to do, more interesting, more engaging, and bringing value to the work that they're being asked to do every day. The McCain's number one priority is safety. And so one of the things I'm very passionate about, again, is how do these digital tools sort of improve the day-to-day activities and day-to-day cadence of the people working throughout the factory, whatever they're doing on the line, or as I said, shift supervisor, shift management, to provide better data, help managers and leaders provide a safer environment, provide hopefully a more fun environment, a more engaging environment.
course.
And many of the operators have talked about the opportunity to learn how to use analytics more in their day-to-day. Many of the ones that we're talking to, they're super excited about the tools that they're seeing. And like I said, we're all impacted by digital transformation in our personal life day-to-day. We all see the kinds of new toys and gadgets that we can buy for our home and for our kids in lots of different places. So you'd only expect the same at work as well.
I absolutely agree with you. And I think that's actually a great segue in terms of looking at it from a process standpoint. And I understand, and I know from having worked with you for some time now, that one of the aspects of this project, one of the aspects of the transformation that you're leading at McCain, is the concept of adopting agile processes. Would you give us a little bit of insight into why you think that's important and how you're going about incorporating that, and to what level and to what depth within the company you're bringing these process-based changes?
So I'm a huge believer in agile. I'll say that I came to technology a bit later in my career, and so I even joke with saying that agile is my mother tongue. I don't really understand waterfall development and why you would ever use that. Now, it's a bit of a joke because, of course, I can appreciate different types of development practices. But I just think Agile is such a wonderful way to build products and to build engagement, because at the end of the day, technology people build things for people to use, not for it to sit on a shelf. And so what I love most about Agile is that user centricity, or putting the operator at the center, is how we've been talking about in this project. And so Agile for me is about closing that gap between what I would like to have and what's possible for someone to build me at a reasonable cost. And so we've been practicing Agile in our other digital transformation, the agriculture transformation, as I mentioned. We also practice Agile in our data and analytics team. And we're practicing Agile now in this digital manufacturing program. How deep does it go? It's certainly the practice for development in our digital and data teams today. Now, there's certain areas of technology where that's not appropriate or it's not possible to go all the way. But we are trying our best in this program, to the point where we're investing in training all of our team in Agile practice. We have an Agile coach. We, Chris, as you know, I'm a little bit obsessive about ensuring we have retrospectives and sort of storming sort of anything that's kind of going to go awry in an Agile process. Because for me, landing the process is almost as important as landing the tools, because we're building a capability to build tools, not just building the tools, because it's very important to me, not only that the tools get built, but how they get built, and that they're built in a way that's sustainable and doesn't kill neither our development team nor all of the manufacturing team that we're so generous to have their time shared with us, that we need to make that a good experience. And I believe the experience of building these digital tools is as important as the tools themselves.
Gotcha. Thank you for that. And in terms of the tools themselves, to get tactical for a second here and to talk about a little bit of the actual work around the project and how you arrived at how to approach it. In terms of the features and use cases that are required as far as the products that are being built, and the full well knowing that within McCain's process, there's sets and sets of processes and steps that need to be taken and considerations that need to be made at any given moment by a number of people working across the organization. How did you go about figuring out the use cases and features to focus on first? Mm-hmm. Where did you say, hey, this is where we need to start? And how did you arrive at that?
Yeah. So I feel very lucky, and I do not take it for granted, that I have a very strong mandate from our manufacturing leadership to transform their processes. That was a journey that was set on about a year ahead of the digital transformation. It's a transformation we call MDI, or McCain Driving Impact. And it's a business-led initiative, so it's led by the manufacturing leadership team to codify and transform our manufacturing practices towards best-in-class. It's recognizing that there's best-in-class across all the manufacturing processes and all of the plants, and how do we set a standard and drive all plants to that standard. Now, what we had heard in going through our bit of our roadshow that there were common pain points in executing some of those best practice standards. And as you would expect in any kind of business transformation, there's drift from the standard at a certain point in time. And so as a technologist, my eyes light up like, that's a problem we can solve, right? If there's a business process that we know is the right one, but it's just difficult to keep executing on with routine, that's a great opportunity for technology. So in some ways, my prioritization was done for me by the business transformation that's being led by MDI. And our goal is simply, not to understate it, but our goal is simply to digitize processes that they've already determined are best in class that are likely different for each plant in a slightly different way. And to bring some standardization to those practices, to bring more data to those practices. And the sort of the final piece of our program is to also step change perhaps the standard through AI.
It must be really great to, and I've not seen it happen all the time in projects like this, but it must be amazing to have that level of backing and that level of support where it's a foregone conclusion almost that transformation or change needs to happen. We already know where the places are that we need to impact the most. Now go make this happen and find the right partners and find the right technologies and you're back fully. It's incredible to hear that. It's amazing to see it and really actually quite rewarding to be part of it, just as a bit from our end. In terms of what you just mentioned, and the last thing you left us with here was a little bit about AI. And that part of it is something that's a hot topic currently, something that's interesting to many people. Can you provide us a little bit more detail, as much as you're able to, in terms of how AI specifically incorporates into this project and where you see that fit being the greatest in terms of bringing benefits to McCain's processes and an organization and the project at large?
Yeah, I'm really inspired by the advances in technology and AI and particular ChatGPT. I think we will joke about the world before ChatGPT and the world after ChatGPT. I think it's just unlocked the imagination for so many people of what AI can be. In this particular project, we see the role of AI as providing real-time data and insight to operators to make decisions. So we are looking for the role of AI to be alongside the operator. So AI here is providing richer, more real-time data and recommendations for then the operator to take a decision or the grower in this case as well. So an example I can use is we grow potatoes in the Northern Hemisphere, right? Between call it April and August. But we make French fries year round. So it might be hard to imagine, but we store potatoes from call it about September all the way through till the following August when we get the new crop. I don't know about you, Chris, but like if I buy a bag of potatoes and I put them in my basement, like I can't even use them like 3 weeks later. So it's kind of a miracle that our growers can store potatoes in a way that are we can then process them into delicious French fries no matter what time of the year. I still find this to be a bit of a miracle. Now it's not actually a miracle. It's hard work, it's experience, it's enormous investment. You should see these storage sheds. They have more spray foam than I think entire subdivisions might have. They're incredible pieces of CapEx if you think about it. These storage sheds. But there's a lot of labor also that goes into monitoring the storage conditions. And if you think about advances of technology with sensors, with cameras, with cool AI that can predict how small amounts of data entry, so a fraction of what we might be collecting today through manual labor, could then support predictions of how the crop is behaving in the storage facilities, providing even more real-time data about the quality of the potatoes so that we can act on any potential quality issues sooner and reducing waste, as I mentioned, and helping us use more of the potatoes that that the farmers work so hard to grow for us. So that's one example of AI. And again, it's using AI to improve the work of our team, to give our teams faster and better data to make better decisions.
That's fascinating, and at the same time, really also encouraging to see that there are so many uses and so many cases being developed for AI. And you know, when that day comes, when we're having the chat about the world before ChatGPT and after ChatGPT, I actually wonder myself whether ChatGPT will be involved in that conversation.
Yeah.
You know, and give us more. In terms of the scale of the project, moving on to that, and the challenges that are inherent in doing something like this and finding the right resources internally and externally, inevitably, there's always some need for a partner or a third party to be involved. And I know in this project, there are many. If we could quickly chat about two in particular. I'm curious, as far as scale AI's role in this project, and it's something that's been touted in the press, and it's something that's been brought up in on numerous occasions. What is the role there that scale AI's plays, and why did you partner with them in this in this endeavor?
So scale AI is a supercluster that provides funding to support scaling AI use cases in Canadian companies. We were introduced to them a couple years ago, and we actually ran a small project with them in our agriculture team. It's the project's called Precision Harvest. And the process of applying to a project under Scale AI was fascinating. And I was still relatively new to McCain when we were going through that process. And I learned so much about what it would take for our company to be successful with AI. What were the hurdles? Where in the organization were the resources, like you said, right? The SMEs who know the current practices, and how do we grow that? What's the network of people that we need around us to support acceleration of AI development? And I learned so much through that project. So I always say to the Scale AI team that their process is rigorous. And as a Canadian taxpayer, I appreciate that their process is rigorous, but the rigorous process also helps us learn a lot, like almost as much as doing the project to sort of set up the project. And so what I really appreciate about them is their process is detailed. It forces really important conversations, because I think sometimes companies get a great ambition for digital or for AI, and maybe they can build a business case and they can get funding, and that's really well and good. But then where projects often break down is, like you said, those resources. Data quality assessment came back very poor. Now what? And a lot of curveballs can be thrown at you. And this the process of applying to Scale AI helped us address some of those curveballs. There's always going to be more to come, but helped us address a lot of those curveballs even before we had to apply for the business case. And I think it helped us clarify our business case. So when we started thinking about the manufacturing journey, as I said, we again thought about Scale AI, and the ambition was much larger with the manufacturing project than it had been for the Precision Harvest project. I called the Precision Harvest project our appetizer. This program really was the big meal. And like the learning that we had gone through for the first application, the second application sort of 10x that level of learning in terms of what we would need technically, what kind of resources internally, what kind of partners we would want to bring along this journey with us. And they just have a great group of advisors. They have a great technical set of advisors that you can review your not your code, but certainly your ideas for how you would model different use cases. So they're really a great resource. And I really encourage any Canadian company considering AI to reach out to them for advice and support with projects that you're interested in.
Gotcha. Thank you. And then in terms of the, again, the tactical aspect of the project and some of the more hands-on portions of it, in terms of the work that we're doing together, would you be open to telling us a little bit about how your team is working with Tribal Scale and where the places you see that that's bringing you benefit in terms of this project?
Yep. So we were introduced to Tribal Scale because we were actively looking for a company that could lead the build of our digital tools. McCain has a great IT team, but less development of bespoke solutions. And so that's specifically what we were looking for with Tribal Scale And we were, that appealed to us is sort of your model around bespoke development, custom solutions. We knew that we wanted at the end of the day, a custom tool. This wasn't about implementing a SaaS solution. That was about having our own front end to house the outcomes of the AI models and present the data back and have, again, that fun and engaging user experience for the operators and other users in the plant. We also were also looking for a company that was Canadian based because the main lighthouse site for our digital transformation of manufacturing is in Florenceville, New Brunswick, which is the original home of McCain. And it's the home of our farm of the future and a home of quite a lot of innovation that we're doing. So it only made sense that our digital manufacturing lighthouse would be in Florenceville. And so the team's ability to be in Florenceville when we needed for user testing and user research, that really appealed to us. And then also the focus around UI and UX. Any digital transformation really depends on building something that people want to use and that is engaging and useful. I think especially if you think about a manufacturing use case and the persona of someone who's working on a line or with farmers, for instance, they have pretty specific requirements for what these tools need to look like. You know, if you're working in the bright sunshine, for example, the colors you need to have. And so we needed a team that was going to be get comfortable with that and come and wear the hard hat and come on into the plant and see what our operators were working with in terms of the conditions, how loud it is, for instance, and thinking all about the user experience of using these tools was very important to us. So having a team that was local and ready to travel within Canada was important to us.
Thanks. I appreciate that insight. And to close things off a little bit and to maybe put a bit of ribbon around the conversation we've been having today. In terms of the project so far, and it's nowhere near completion and there's still a lot of work to do, is there a single point or a single challenge or surprising moment or something that jumps out at you as far as the project status today and where we are that surprised you or that where you learned something new and incredible or really just a piece of advice that you'd want to share with somebody who's on the same journey or somebody who's thinking about the same journey and anything you'd like to share?
We're still early and we could probably ask this question a number of times through the program. I think probably the good insight was sort of last week, right? Where we were working towards what in IT speak, we would call a UAT. And certainly in Agile speak, a UAT can be, well, frankly, anytime, right? Anytime the sprint's over and you're releasing new code. And I think your team, who are sort of Agile native and used to working in very digital environments, there was a different understanding about what a UAT could or should be relative to, call it McCain, more traditional IT environment where for us, a UAT is sort of a momentous occasion and we're rolling a red carpet and we're ordering lots of pizzas and we're making sure that whatever the users are touching is the perfect, flawless, no buggy environment so that they can find, you know, the edge use cases that we'll put into the final before we finally push the code to production. And so that was just a different, those were like, we use the same word, UAT, but we had vastly different expectations for what that moment would be like. And I thought that was just a great insight, you know, in the end we had to postpone, you know, said UAT. But it was a great learning moment. And since I'm focused, as I said, on building a capability to build digital tools and not fussing too much if we had to move the UAT by 1 week, I think it was just a great insight to say, hey, we think about this differently. And what the burden of proof for UAT is just different in our heads. And we actually agreed as a team to just not even use the word UAT anymore. We're going to talk about operator testing and we're going to talk about product team testing or product owner testing. And it's little things like that, that I think a well-functioning team can hit a bump like that. And we can have an open professional conversation about, you know, what went wrong, what was the breakdown, and then we can move forward with clear actions that help drive a new team standard and a new norms and ways of operating that can ultimately help the team be stronger. Because now we have this sort of inside joke, right, about how we don't have UATs in our project anymore. Right. I always look for moments like that where, you know, it could have been a moment, right? I'm an IT executive. You could tell me, hey, the UAT was canceled. The project is, you know, on red status. But in the end, we need to take that away as an opportunity to learn and to grow and to ultimately have something we can laugh about and talk about on a podcast at some point.
Absolutely agree with you. And we constantly learn and we constantly adjust the way that we work. And we had a very similar experience in terms of what we learned. For me, my personally, with the experience I've had in the past, I'm constantly reminded of the fact that communication and common language are at the core of most issues, most yes. problems that arrive within a project. And if you can find that common language early on and you maintain the strong communication necessary, then success is really just a matter of getting the rest of the ducks in order. And beyond that, there's actually not that many, right? That often seems to be the most complicated portion of it. Carolyn, again, thank you. As we come to the end of this this episode, I'd like to ask you one final question, which is for those of us who are lucky enough to live within an area or part of the world where a McCain product of some sort is available, in particular the frozen potato variety. Mm-hmm. In your experience, which is the one we should be looking for? What's the best French fry?
That's like asking me who's my favorite child. You can't ask that question. So first, just a quick stat. So more than one in four French fries around the world is a McCain French fry. If you happen to be in Canada, my favorite product that I can buy in my stores in Canada is the Bistro Savory Frites, which is just delicious. And if you give it 8 minutes, 8 to 8.5 minutes in your air fryer, is just a perfect side dish to basically anything you can imagine. So I highly recommend the Bistro Savory Frites.
Perfect. Perfect. Thank you so much for that insight. All the other insight that you've provided in all of this, we really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us. This is Chris Krasinski with Tribal Scale. You are listening to First Name Basis. You can find more episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and more. Carolyn, once again, thank you for joining. This has been First Name Basis. Appreciate everybody's time. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. Bye-bye.